Hey everybody, what is up? Chad Wesley Smith here, bringing you another episode of the Big Ugly Podcast. Today I have two special guests as we preview UFC 227, TJ Dillashaw versus Cody Garbrandt 2, this Saturday at the Staples Center. First, I am joined by my main jiu-jitsu coach, Brent Littell. Brent is a 10th Planet black belt in no-gi and a Gracie Baja black belt in the gi. Has been involved in jiu-jitsu and of course, as a periphery to that, MMA training for several years, working under Eddie Bravo, coaching people like Joe Rogan and all kinds of people. And then we're also joined by Gracie Baja headquarters head professor, Philippe De La Monica. And Philippe is TJ Dillashaw's jiu-jitsu coach. He also works with Cub Swanson, coaches Rafael Dos Anjos. And both of these guys give a lot of great insight into this weekend's fights. And of course, particularly into TJ Dillashaw's preparation to defend his title against Cody Garbrandt. Just getting the Big Ugly Podcast started, just the second episode here. If you haven't subscribed yet on iTunes, please do so. Give me a 5-star review if you like it, or if you love my other podcasts, the Jug Life Podcast and Beers with Chad. It's going to help more people find it. Beyond powerlifting and weightlifting, I'm really passionate about football, basketball, Olympic sports, and MMA, and I'm excited to talk and share more of my passion about these. So this is the Big Ugly Podcast, UFC 227 preview. Listen, share it with a friend who wants to hear it. Brent and I will be in attendance on Saturday at UFC 227 at Staples Center. Obviously, Professor Philippe will be there as well in the corner with TJ Dillashaw, and we're looking forward to a great night of fights. Hey everybody, what is up? I am here with Brent Littell, 10th Planet black belt, Gracie Baja black belt instructor here at Gracie Baja headquarters in Irvine, California. How are you doing this morning, Brent?
I'm doing fantastic, a little sweaty after we got some rolls in, but I think I'll survive.
Yeah, so apologies to the listeners if I sound very out of breath the whole time, but Brent just finished kicking my ass for an hour, and I'm of advanced size, so it takes me a little bit to regain my breath. So let's just hop right into UFC 227 preview. This Saturday at the Staples Center in Los Angeles, California, we will be in attendance. So come say hi. We're going to talk about the main card, leading off with 13th ranked middleweight Thiago Santos fighting Kevin Holland. Kevin Holland is pretty much brand new as you could be to the UFC, having won Dana White's Tuesday Night Contender Series just 8 weeks ago by decision. Santos is fighting out of Brazil. Holland, a local guy from Riverside, California, but now fighting out of Texas. As far as the tail of the tape goes, Holland has pretty big advantages there. 3-inch height, 5-inch reach advantage. Really a lanky guy. But if you've seen Thiago Santos fight, the dude is... He's throwing punches about as hard as he possibly could, looking for the knockout. But he is coming off himself a pretty brutal knockout against David Branch not too long in April, where he lost in the first round. Previous to that, he had won 4 fights in a row and 8 of his last 10. But as we're looking at this fight and dealing with the psychology of fighters, when someone gets knocked out the way that Thiago Santos does, how do you see them responding to that?
It's a good question about resiliency, actually. And that differs between people. But overall, I think where you take a quick knockout, you can always write it off as a small mistake. Whereas if you had five rounds of getting dominated, it's going to be difficult for you to jump over that psychological hurdle of saying, you know what, I am still the better fighter. Whereas sometimes a lucky shot lands. They call it a puncher's chance for a reason. So I think for a lot of people, when they get knocked out quickly, they can come back with some pretty easy rationalizations of, oh, I dropped my hand, he caught me real quick, not a big deal. Whereas the guys who've gotten ground out, who've been beaten for three rounds bloody, they're going to have a much harder time coming back.
And the other side of that, do you think that there's a tendency for fighters maybe, you know, of course, to step in the octagon, those guys have a ton of pride. For someone like Santos, who got knocked out quick, to come back and show, you know, that wasn't me. I'm coming out throwing, taking chances right off the bat.
Absolutely. I guarantee he could not sleep for the next couple weeks because all he was doing in his mind was stewing in anger about whatever little mistakes he made and how he could rectify them. So I'm sure he wants to prove himself. And with Dana, you only get so many chances. So when these guys come in there, they want to prove themselves every single time, especially after a loss. When you put two losses together and you're coming in for your third one, man, you're fighting like you're on fire.
Yeah, and I'd imagine a ton of pride for Santos here that Holland is brand new to the UFC, his first real UFC fight here. You know, sometimes I think beginners can have like a blissful ignorance that he maybe doesn't even realize the magnitude of the situation. But for a guy coming just 8 weeks ago, getting his UFC contract straight into the main event, you know, near his hometown, probably going to have a lot of friends and family in the crowd. This will be a very big moment for Kevin Holland, and I think will be very telling if he rises to that occasion or is maybe overwhelmed by the moment. But if we had to make a prediction here, I think we got to pick Thiago Santos. Yeah, I can't imagine picking a guy who's in his first real UFC fight.
Absolutely. You got to go with tried and true and experience. And I'll tell you, having been backstage before, with the big shows, especially the UFC, you get some jitters. There's something to the small amateur shows where, and even the smaller professional shows where you're able to contain your anxiety a little better. But there are guys backstage who break down and cry and just have all sorts of emotions come out of them. They have crazy emotional lability. So with a guy who's been in there a bunch, he's been able to control his anxiety. With a guy who hasn't, it's always that wild card of, is his emotion going to take over?
The next fight on the main card is again, featuring a relative newcomer to the UFC. In the women's strawweight division, we have a fight between Pollyanna Viana and JJ Aldrich. And Viana is 10-1. Her only professional MMA loss came way back by decision in 2014. And 9 of her 10 career victories, again, one win in the UFC. Just a few months ago, a very fast finish of Maya Stevenson via rear naked choke. 9 of her career victories have happened in the first round. So she's only gone the distance twice and only lost one of those by decision. To contrast that, Aldrich has had every single one of her UFC fights go to decision, winning 2 of those and losing 1 in the UFC. Overall has a record of 6-2. So with people who are so used to finishing a fight fast, you know, Viana barely has any experience in beyond the first round. Who do you think has the advantage there if it does go past the first round? Because Aldrich is always going the distance, Viana always finishing in the first.
The person who's always gone the distance. There's something to front runners, people who win in those early rounds. It was something that happened with BJ Penn as well in his career, is he had a lot of really early finishes, putting guys against the fence, pounding their head in. And then when guys were able to be ring tacticians and circle out during the first round, it started to build in his head, what's wrong with me? I'm not able to execute my game plan. If your game plan is go out and kill in the first minute and somebody's able to circle, clinch, use the fence, and then you're not winning, you start thinking, man, my game plan's not working. Now, I understand no one's going to have a single-dimension game plan like that, but it always goes in your head. You go back to your experiences. My experience is I've been able to maul people in the first minute. I'm not mauling this person. Oh, no, what's in my tool belt now? right? I know I have good tools, but I haven't had to use them that much. Whereas the, you know, your other fighter has been deep, has dug themselves out of holes, has been able to maintain their composure as their wind goes, as their power goes, right? At the beginning of a fight, everyone is, just like on Street Fighter, they're at full power. Mm-hmm. As the fight continues, their power decreases. And when that happens, some people who are knockout artists are no longer knockout artists.
Yeah, and I think the wind is maybe a big question mark there as well. Obviously, everyone who's on a UFC main card trains very hard, but we've seen it, and I think it's part conditioning and maybe part psychological. If you come out trying to finish the fight within a minute, you know, you're probably expending much more energy than you would be if you're going in thinking, I'm going to fight as long as I need to fight here. And whether that was, you know, Brock Lesnar or Francis Ngannou, maybe Ronda Rousey, people who, you know, had these really fast finishes. When it didn't finish quite so quickly, you saw them get very, very gassed. And maybe that's the case with Pollyanna Viana here. If I had to make a pick, you know, based on the betting line, Pollyanna, a minus 280 favorite. Aldrich, you know, she's winning all the time by decision. I've never seen her fight. Maybe that means that she's, you know, just technical and a great fighter. Maybe it means she's very conservative. But I think, you know, the people who make the fights, Dana White, everyone, they know that Pollyanna Viana is very talented. That's why they're putting her on the main card in just her second UFC fight. She finished Maya Stevenson very, very fast in the first round of her debut. So I'd pick Viana here.
I as well.
All right, moving on to our next fight. We have number 10, Renato Moicano, versus number 5, Cub Swanson. This one, based on the rankings, you'd think that Cub is probably the favorite, but the Vegas odds, and they make billions of dollars because they're good at making these odds, that Moicano is a huge, huge favorite here on the betting odds, minus 400, and Cub is plus 300, which was kind of shocking to me when I first saw it, just based on their names, you know, like their status in the sport and their rankings. You know, Swanson coming off two straight losses, Moicano coming off a win. Moicano very, very methodical in his decision victory against Calvin Kattar. He's got these long legs. He was keeping him away with leg kicks. He's got reach advantage both in the arms and legs. Big advantage there over Cub. It seems like both of them really strong ground game, and Cub had always been known to be this kind of ultra-aggressive fighter, but did not show that in his last fight against Frankie Edgar, his second loss to Edgar. So, you know, Brent, you have some experience seeing Cub train. He trains here some at Gracie Baja HQ with Professor Philippe. Do you think he can get inside of this kind of rangy leg kick game and get it to the ground?
Absolutely. He's a salty dog, and he's been fighting forever, and so I think he knows what he needs to do. He's just got some bad momentum going right now, and I think that's what we're seeing on these betting lines, is that people are seeing a trend, and they think they're going to do some trend following. But you can never count out a guy like Cub Swanson, because he's dangerous from everywhere, has a ton of ring experience. Both these guys actually coming off losses to a really strong Brian Ortega as well. So, you know, you look at these and you see losses, but these losses are not to chumps. Frankie Edgar being a former champ and just an all-out stud, and then Brian Ortega, the up-and-comer who, you know, unfortunately wasn't able to have his championship bout recently, but he's, you know, the next man in line. So I'm not looking at this and saying, oh, Cub can't do it. Cub's coming off of two losses. I'm looking at Cub's had some hard fights. You know, there's no easy ones. Once you start winning the UFC, you stop getting easy fights. And so sometimes they go your way, sometimes they don't. I think he can be successful in this fight because he's going to be able to use his brain, be able to use his dearth of experience as well.
All right. Who's your pick there?
Cub Swanson's going to be my pick. I know it's not the favorite, but I'm going to pick Cub also. You know, you got to root for your home team.
Definitely, definitely. So moving on to our co-main event is the champ, Mighty Mouse, Demetrius Johnson, defending his title again against number one contender, Henry Cejudo. Cejudo, a gold medalist in wrestling, but it would be pretty hard, I think, for anyone to pick against Demetrius Johnson here. He has defended his title 11 consecutive times, hasn't lost since 2011. This is a rematch in which Johnson finished Cejudo in the first round, from 2016. Yeah, you would look at Cejudo being this incredible wrestler, being a gold medalist, but he actually has a surprisingly low takedown rate, 38% successful takedowns, though he does have a 100% successful takedown defense. You know, all these kind of big names in the UFC, if you were to line up all their resumes, Demetrius Johnson probably has the best resume of all those people. 11 consecutive title defenses. Do you think that him not getting more notoriety and everything, or more respect, is that he's just so much better than everyone else? Or maybe it's a bit of a weak division?
I actually have a different thought on it altogether, which is that it's a little guy division. Nobody cares about the little guys. You know, you look at boxing, who's the heavyweight champion of the world? Forever, that was the title everyone wanted to have. Brock Lesnar, why is he so famous? He's in the heavyweight division. People like to see the big boys hit each other, right? Big boys are scary. Watching two guys who are 135 pounds fight, a lot of people do not relate to it because they're not looking at the technical aspect of it. They're just like, I want to see leather get thrown. I want to see guys get cut open.
125 pounds,
I'm sorry. I forgot. Yeah, so you're looking at these little guys throw, and people are just not that excited by it. Show me a little guy who's had a tremendous career in terms of promotion and so forth, and they're very few and far between. You have to start getting into the heavier divisions to see people get excitement.
Making a pick here.
Oh, for me, it's definitely going to be Johnson. The last fight, Cejudo had trouble actually with his wrestling. Johnson was controlling the head control against the fence. He was able to circle off the fence. We don't have a ton of, you know, it was a quick finish. But just from their clinch exchanges, Johnson was winning them, which is a surprise. And it's not a surprise because wrestling has its own skill set. So if you can learn how to outpoint people, in 2008 at Beijing, that doesn't mean your wrestling is going to be effective in MMA. And Johnson, who has Matt Hume as his coach, has figured out, you know, how to teach his student to keep off the fence, to use his shoulder, to circle, to get head control, and then to use the clinch to his advantage. I don't see Cejudo making that adjustment that he's going to need. He's already as good at wrestling as he's going to get. What's he going to change? Yeah. And his wide stance for his boxing and his striking is actually takes away from his wrestling because now he doesn't have as strong of a shot coming off of it. So I just don't see the weapons Cejudo's going to be able to pull out.
Yeah, 11 title defenses in a row. I think he's going to make it 12 here for sure. Which brings us to our main event of the evening. Champion TJ Dillashaw versus Cody Garbrandt. From a Vegas standpoint, nearly identical odds for them both to win. Minus 120, Dillashaw making him a very, very slight favorite over Garbrandt at minus 110. And I think what makes this fight so exciting is it seems as if you have two people who genuinely really dislike each other. Brett, can you give us a little bit of context about this, the history between Dillashaw and Garbrandt?
Well, there's a reason they call it No Love, right? Because there's no love lost there. They used to train with the same team, Team Alpha Male, up in the Sacramento area. And TJ actually had a falling out with them, or, you know, I don't want to say that he necessarily. There was a mutual falling out. There were some issues at the gym. I'll say this about TJ. TJ is a competitor. Whether you're here in the gym just getting sparring rounds in, or you're out and you're playing a game of tennis and he's never played tennis before, he wants to be a front runner. He wants to be the lead. He wants to be, they call it Team Alpha Male, he wants to be the alpha in a room. And that doesn't rub guys the right way sometimes, and I don't think it rubbed Cody the right way. And TJ was big brothering him in the gym, beating him up. And TJ is known for having just this intense, sharp edge when he's training. And I think, you know, with him and Cody, and then they were on The Ultimate Fighter as well, Cody can't stand it. There's some guys who feel that TJ's way of presenting himself is almost bullying, and Cody sees himself as, I'm going to stand up to the bully, right? He has that moral outrage, and so he's using that to fuel his fire. Their last fight, Cody had the fight inside his hands. The end of the first round, the bell rung, and you were like, man, if he had another 30 seconds, this could have been over. So yeah,
maybe another 5 seconds.
Oh, yeah, he had victory snatched from his hands, so he's going to be even more upset because he's like, man, I got it on him. I almost defeated the bully, and then the bully won.
Yeah, and I think that is what's adding so much hype to this one, is the way that their first fight went, with Garbrandt landing that huge shot right at the end of the first round, maybe 6-7 seconds left in the round, and it did generate plenty of good Saved by the Bell memes, which I always appreciate. My favorite show ever, that's how I learned how to be so cool, was just what would Zach Morris do? But we actually get a lot of kind of special exposure here at Gracie Baja headquarters to TJ Dillashaw, as our head professor, Philippe De La Monica, is TJ's jiu-jitsu coach. And Philippe is going to join us on the phone right now to talk about this Saturday's fight.
Been working a little bit with Cub as well, because he's part of TJ's camp. And we always train together. He's a great guy. Yeah, we've been doing some training together.
So obviously, with this fight, Dillashaw Garbrandt, there's a lot of emotion in it. It really seems like these guys don't like each other. Is this, you know, something that TJ kind of expresses during training, like a specific dislike for Cody Garbrandt?
Yeah, they used to be like a teammate, and you know, there's a lot of history behind them, and like they really don't like each other, you know, which is, I think, is a good for like extra motivation for a combat sport, you know. It's good when it gives you a good motivation, and is everything they do is like a real, yeah.
So from a coach's perspective, what do you think is something that TJ has done exceptionally well during this particular camp?
Well, TJ, he's a guy who works really hard. He always trying to learn the new things, add new things to his game and to his, you know, ground game, striking, wrestling, everything. He's always in camp. He works hard, even if he has no fight schedule. His routine is the same, you know. And he's 100% ready for this fight. And, you know, whenever you get a fight at that level, which is a championship fight of the UFC with the two best guys in the division, you know, anything can happen. But we focus on what we can control, which is be 100% ready mentally, physically, you know, and get there to pick on that Saturday night.
All right, Coach, you got any predictions you want to share for Saturday night?
Well, DJ, I was mentioning yesterday in another interview that anywhere the fight goes, he's ready, you know. He has no holes on his game, so which kind of gives him a lot of confidence, you know. We prepare for everything, even like last camp when he fought Corey the last time. We did a lot of jiu-jitsu, and then the fight ended up being, he ended up getting the knockout. But, you know, he's ready everywhere, so it's hard to predict where the fight goes. You know, each fight has a game plan, but you cannot rely only on that. You can have to be ready for any situation. You know, he's ready for any situation.
Great. Well, we're excited to be there watching on Saturday night, and excited to see you in the corner. So thank you so much, Professor, for taking the time, and good luck to you and TJ this weekend.
Thank you so much, Chad. I appreciate it. Thank you.
All right. Have a good day.
You too. Thank you. Bye.
All right, so we got some great insights there from Professor Philippe. Really excited to see him in the corner for TJ Dillashaw in this big, big match on Saturday night. Predictions?
I'm going to go with Dillashaw. Big brother beats little brother.
Yeah. Definitely got to root for Dillashaw here. Got to pick him. I think it's going to be a great fight. Both the guys are going to be coming out hot. There's been a ton of shit talking going into this. But Dillashaw is the pick for me as well. Brent, why don't you tell us real quick about your new DVD you have out?
Oh, thank you for bringing that up. Yes, I came out with a DVD of Side Control Escapes, the 12 must-know Side Control Escapes. And the reason I picked that position is it is a position that is utterly neglected by all of the instructionals. You want an instructional on guard? You will find 500. There'll be a new one out by the time we finish this podcast. You want an instructional on how to defend in bad positions like side control? You're lucky if you find one or two. And actually, you're probably now going to find mine. So you're very lucky, because you will find mine. I created a system out of getting out from the bottom, whereas other people do not have that system. So I think that through the step-by-step analysis of where you are, what to do from where you are, and how to position yourself, you're going to be able to find yourself getting out from the bottom with even the heaviest opponents on top of you. I've been so pleased to get the positive feedback from people who are now telling me, hey, Brent, you know, I used to be afraid to be in side control, and now I let guys pass just so I can practice. And that could be you too. So go ahead and check it out. It's on budovideos.com. That's BUDO videos.com. Brentlittle.com, and I'm Brent Littell, 12 must-know side control escapes. And I would love to hear from you if you have any trouble with any of the moves there. Just send me a message, and I'm very responsive.
All right, and thanks for joining us, Brent. Again, Brent is a 10th Planet black belt in no-gi, Gracie Baja black belt in the gi, professor here at Gracie Baja headquarters in Irvine, California. Going to be an exciting Saturday night at the Staples Center for UFC 227. We will be there in attendance, and thanks for listening.